Welcome to the Destination Next podcast. This is a podcast hosted by me, Chris Hall, in collaboration with Sterker. With this podcast, we're going to be celebrating everything endurance, supporting the everyday athlete who are maybe not necessarily in the limelight. People are now going further, faster, and better on the products they're training with and with the equipment they've got. Sterker offer a range of nutritional, carbohydrate-based products that are vegan and super friendly on your stomach. And you can use discount code NEXT10 at www.sterker.com to get 10% off your next order.
All over the place.
Sorry, I'm doing that because I forget to do it. and I have forgotten to do it before. And I don't know. Sometimes I remember, sometimes I don't. So I'm just doing it now while I've remembered. But yeah, the jet lag from America must have been... Because you must have literally gone out to America. What race was it again?
Belgian Waffle Ride.
I get so confused because there's so many like gravel races out there and all generally run by the same one or two organizers. It feels like I'm very external to it, so I don't really know. But yeah, and it feels like you basically went there, did the race, came back.
Pretty much, yeah. I had one day at home here, pretty much just to get my stuff together and then back off to the HQ and then off to Germany. It was, yeah, no real respite at all. But yeah, I mean, my other half's actually just gone off to South Africa for 6 weeks with work. So I literally did that trip, saw her for like a couple of hours and then straight back off again. So it's, yeah, it's been a real sort of scramble in our household.
And then obviously with what I do and similarly to what you do, there is a fair amount of international travel, part of the parcel of it. And I do feel, personally, I feel quite guilty about it because I understand and appreciate that there's a lot of emissions from flying. I completely understand that. But I have to sort of toss it up and being like, this is also my job and how I make a living. And part of that is showing and showcasing different places in the world and doing events that are international. It's a very, very tricky thing to juggle. It really is. And I know like my mate Josh, for example, for Atlas Mountains, he got the ferry from Portsmouth and then basically trained down through Spain and then got a ferry on the like the south coast of Spain across to Morocco, which sounds great. Like it sounds great, but logistically that took him like a week. And yeah. Not only did it take a long time, there's a hell of a lot of additional stress doing that. Like you couldn't do that to go to America. What's your options? Fly or get on a boat? And a boat's going to take a month probably.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the behind the scenes of the bike racing, it's not particularly environmentally friendly, is it?
Mm.
But hey.
I think like the smaller scale stuff is better than sort of like Tour de France, you know, the pro level Grand Tour racing where you're seeing.
Oh yeah.
I can't even think how many, every team's probably got like five or six cars that are driving or being flown around the world. There's very few races, maybe save for some of the smaller races where the team are given a car. Or like I think it's the Arctic race of Norway, for example, where they're trying to make it a zero emissions race. So that all the team cars that are there are provided and they're all electric cars. But that still doesn't account for the massive truck of bikes that's driving halfway across the country and like the food truck, which is driving halfway across the country to get there. So like, yeah, for a sport that should be really, I guess, good in terms of, you know, a bicycle is, it should in theory be good, you know, it's actually at the top level is incredibly bad for like emissions. I don't know what the solution is to it. I mean, it's the same with the production, I guess, of bikes and components like tires, for example. Tires are really hard to recycle. Bikes are made of carbon fiber, you know, that produces emissions. Like, I mean, you can argue that it's better with steel bikes. Aluminium bikes are still quite bad. Titanium bikes are still quite bad. I don't know why this is how I've started this podcast, but it's been something that's kind of like I do a lot of thinking when I'm walking the dog, and this is one of the things I was thinking about. So got off on a random tangent. So your name is Sam. You're a very nice man. Nice man, Sam. Let's you know, I think I first knew of you through Clash. Now, how many years was Clash going for in the end?
So Clash started in 2017 and folded last year, so 5 years.
Yeah, and it was a, you know, I guess started mainly as a fixed gear team.
Yeah, so I kind of take it back to the start. So I kind of got into cycling through just kind of riding my bike to the skate park, skating for the whole day, riding back, that sort of thing. Riding to college, just really a means of transport, to be honest. I didn't see it as any sort of, you know, I never thought of racing or anything at all. Fast forward a little bit, I got offered a job as a bike messenger in Bristol, just like a very sort of, you know, a couple of days a week on the bike, delivering bakery parcels, that sort of thing, which was really nice. Yeah, enjoyed it very much. Started to kind of do longer rides with that job and really started to kind of enjoy it. And then eventually, like, kind of got involved with the whole sort of fixed gear community in Bristol with you know, the whole messenger scene and the whole fixed gear scene kind of meshed together quite nicely. And it's like a whole, it's a thing. Most fixie riders are messengers. So yeah, and then eventually got into fixed gear riding and then into cyclocross and those sort of other disciplines and I kind of my background with skateboarding and art and music and stuff, the whole cycling world, particularly road cycling, was totally sort of new to me. It was you know, I'd rock up to club rides. Everyone there clearly had quite a bit of money, you know, lots of really nice bikes, lots of kind of snobbery, I guess, not very welcoming. I didn't really feel comfortable at all, because I was used to, you know, rocking up at the skate park, someone hands you a beer, you have a really nice session, and it's just like really good, you have a really good time. So I just wasn't used to it at all. So I kind of took that and I thought, why is it like this? It just didn't really make any sense. Riding bikes is supposed to be fun, right? It's kind of like skateboarding in a sense. Everyone's there to just have fun, right? So, and yeah, it was just really competitive, and I just wasn't used to it. So I kind of had the idea of just setting up my own sort of club team type thing, and just kind of doing a few ride outs, getting some friends together, doing some races. And then, yeah, so the team was set up in 2017, and really the kind of vision was to create something different. And it was at a time where there weren't really many teams kind of doing that as well. There was maybe a real small handful in the UK. And yeah, so our main focus to start out with was fixed gear criterium racing. That was kind of almost, you know, the fixed gear crit scene was almost at the end of its toll in 2017. Yeah. But we kind of caught the last bit of it, really, and it was amazing. So yeah, we did quite a few races in 2017, 2018. Headed out to the Red Hook Crit, the Rad Race, all of the UK criteriums, some of the NL Crit series in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it just sort of naturally started to kind of unfold, really. You know, everyone involved at that time was super passionate about art, music, design, you know, streetwear. It was really kind of like bringing all of that together and creating something quite cool. And the racing really was just like, yeah, we weren't there to win. We were just there to kind of, you know, this is what we're doing. We want to kind of see how far we can push ourselves here and kind of mesh everything, all of our lifestyles in together. And kind of as the years unfolded in 2018, we kind of collaborated with an artist called Mr. Penfold. Really, really amazing and striking designs. So that was like our first proper sort of, I guess it was like our first sort of entrance onto the scene, really, properly. I mean, we got a lot of hype around that kit. A lot of people were just kind of like, well, who the hell are these guys? That is the most fucked up kit I've ever seen. It was just Like, it was so in your face, and it was just exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
The reaction was just like, yeah, who are these guys tattooed up, fucking drinking, you know, crazy colorful kit, fixed gear bikes.
Yeah.
It was it was exactly what we kind of set out to do, really. So yeah, we had a good spell, really. As the team grew, I grew as an athlete, and everyone on board at the time grew as an athlete as well. So naturally, we started getting a bit better on the bike, started racing a bit more competitively, and taking things seriously. And as the years unfolded, we put a real emphasis on kit design and really working and collaborating with artists, and kind of I almost just saw it as a bit of like moving artwork, really. I thought it was quite cool to kind of have a kit that was just so unique and has a bit of a story behind it. Again, I didn't see anything really like that in the cycling world at the time. And you know, from like skateboarding and streetwear, there was collaborations all the time. There was like really sick artwork on the boards and on the t-shirts and stuff. So that was really cool to kind of see that unfold. So yeah, and then the more people joined over the years, the kind of team drifted in a different way, and we kind of, you know, raced cyclocross, a bit of mountain bike, road. It kind of covered all areas, really. And all of this was just kind of, for me, like I said, I set it up as just a bit of fun, really, and just to kind of see what I can do on the bike. And it's now got to a point where I guess racing has kind of almost become like a like more of a full-time sort of passion project. And yeah, most recently kind of gone in, you know, entered into the gravel world, which is super exciting. It kind of reminds me of when we first started out on the fixed gear scene. It's community driven, you know, the events are great, it's a good laugh, there's much more than just a bike race. And yeah, I mean, so it kind of got to a point with the team last year where I was juggling so much, freelance work, lots going on there, lots going on with personal sponsors and kind of the management of the team started to become more of a job.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just tricky to manage, and I think it just got to a point where I was pretty burned out with it all, and just wanted to kind of see what I can do on my own this year. Mm-hmm. Going into 2023. So I've put the team on pause for now, really. I mean, it's not like I folded it at the start. We've not folded it. It's just more of like, I just want a bit of headspace for this year, really see what I can do on the bike, see where I can go, and just kind of almost take a step back and get a bit of a feel for what I want out of bike racing.
Mm-hmm.
And having the team is just such a big responsibility, you know, there's so many sort of moving parts, and it's just hard to keep it moving. So yeah, that's kind of the crux of Clash, I guess.
I have a few questions leading out from that. So the first one is, do you think that there will ever be a fixed gear scene the same, looking back at the Red Hook Crit days? Do you think it's ever going to come back?
Well, we've literally just got back from Düsseldorf in Germany for the Cycle World show, and that's with work. And they actually had a fixed gear race around the trade show.
The show was going on directly through all the stands, right?
No, it was after the show. So it started at around 6 p.m. You know, light was dropping. It reminded me of some of the fixed gear crits where traditionally they are done in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually as the night set in, the race was still going on and it was super exciting. The crowd was electric. There was lots of beer going around. And it took me back to the early days, really. And I thought, man, there's still a scene here in Europe of some mm-hmm. sort. It wasn't the biggest race by any means, but it was alive. That was it, really. It was alive. I mean, because so Red Hook Crit was the biggest fixed gear criterion, that kind of shaped the whole fixed gear scene, really. And that folded in at the end of 2018, which was, like I say, was when we were kind of like rife, really. We were kind of, all we wanted to do was race fixed circuits because it was amazing. So it was a real bummer to see it end. Mm. And people can find out why it ended online, I'm sure. I don't want to go into all of that. But yeah, so that was taken away. That was like a sort of 5 or 6 series event around the world. The best professional fixed gear riders, the best sponsors, the best crowds. It just like a real, real big. It was like almost like the Formula One of bike racing, really.
Yeah.
It was incredible. But yeah, I mean, it's, I wouldn't say it's died out. There's still definitely a scene in Europe. Like I say, Germany's still pretty buzzing. The Netherlands have their own series called the NL Crit Series, and that's still going pretty well. There's still a good handful of teams out there kind of really sort of trying to keep it alive. I mean, in the UK, I think it's kind of dying out a little bit. Mm. Last year, there was the Thunder Crit by the NLTCBM, however you say it, guys.
North London Thundercats, Black Metal.
Thundercats.
What is it? North London Thundercats Black Metal Bike Club. That's what it is. That's the full name.
Yeah. So yeah, those guys have really been sort of the main drivers in the UK. And I take my hat off and have so much respect for Rob and the team that have really been pushing the scene here in the UK, because the events they've put on over the years have just been absolutely brilliant. You know, they've attracted riders from all over the world, like Justin Williams and so on. So yeah, I don't really know. I don't want to speak for the wider community, really. I mean, I know that there's people still absolutely love it. I think what it needs is just that big event to come back and really kind of get that sort of worldwide engagement going again. I mean, there's the Rad Race Series, which do the Last Man Standing, which is a popular race. You know, GCN have done coverage over it. Mm-hmm. They've also got their Fix 42 race, which again is very, very popular. But I don't know. I think I've been speaking to a few people recently, and it almost just feels like a lot of the people that were involved in the fixed gear scene have now moved over into gravel, including myself. So it's just that might just be the new fixed gear scene. Who knows? I mean, I don't know.
I think it's like, the thing is, there's always going to, the whole fixed gear scene started because of, you know, originally it felt like it was very much a, you know, messenger thing that had kind of started and slowly grew and grew and grew. And then you saw more and more serious, competitive, you know, top end athletes coming into it as well, because there was money, there were sponsors. You know, you think we had effectively had pro fixed gear teams that were doing Red Hook Grit, you know, professional
100%,
teams.
Yeah. 100%.
Top end sponsors on the teams. I always think of Specialized Rocket Espresso as an example of that. You know, and you look at the caliber of riders that run those teams as well. And well, there's also riders that were doing those kind of races that are now racing at World Tour. Like,
yep.
The caliber is pretty nuts.
It was an extremely professional outfit, really. I mean, some of the riders, like you just said, Ben, some of the riders that were in that series are now World Tour pros, and at the time, there were World Tour pros riding the race, racing the fixed gear crits. Mm. So I think the thing is, really, it's just such a, everything's so stripped back, you know. It's bike racing, really. You know, you're as sort of corny and as it sounds, you are kind of at one with the bike and the course itself. You know, there's no distractions. You are so dialed into your machine. Mm-hmm. There's no room for mistakes. You know, you've got guys either side of you, everyone's on super high gears, no brakes, no gears, and you're absolutely railing it around the course, probably faster than you would in a road crit, because there's no room for slowing down. Mm-hmm. The safest way to actually race the course is to ride full gas. Mm-hmm. So it's like that's what kind of got me going, really. And it's just such a raw way to race your bike. It's
much more.
Yeah, you're just so in tune with it.
And what I liked about it is, as I've already said, there was very much a top end, you know, high tier athletes and sponsors involved. But in the terms of cycling, to have a fixed gear bike is a cheaper bike to be able to have. There's less of it, easier to replace parts. You know, you could really build up a fixed gear bike that was suitable for a couple of £100 if you really wanted to. And hunted around on forums for certain stuff, etc. But that was the thing that appealed to me, was that it was very accessible to a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was very accessible. The events were welcoming as well. You know, last year we rocked up to the Thundercrit, and you've got all of the all of the messenger crews there, all of the wheelie kids, you know, they're blaring out tunes, smoking fat joints. There's this beer going around. There's this huge welcoming atmosphere. It was just, it was funny. It was just, yeah, you never get that at a road race at all. It's just so unique. And yeah, it's good. It's good, good laugh.
It's interesting what you say about the, I guess, the more club and road scene as well. I think, in the UK, there are a lot of old, I'm also being very conscious of what I say here. There's a lot of old clubs that maybe are not seen as being so welcoming. And so we've seen this like turnaround of people going, do you know what? This vibe doesn't work for me. I'm going to set up my own thing. We've seen that. We've seen various different options of that. And it's a great thing for cycling because ultimately it brings more diverse people into the sport and takes it away from being a, you know, white collar, maybe white collar is not the right way of wording it, you know, a more middle class sport for guys with money, which I think there's in the UK, maybe that's kind of in the club scene, maybe that's been maybe something that's sort of started to happen. And because of, you know, having things set up like Clash, and there's plenty of other examples that I could think of, but like, things like that, which have kind of become an entry point to different people into the sport, is ultimately a good thing. And I mean, I'm talking different ethnicities, bringing more women into the sport, more people, you know, like little simple things like people covered in tattoos. Like when I started cycling, the first club I went for a ride with really didn't like the fact that I had tattoos. I made a real point.
It's the same here. And I think a lot of my friends say the same thing, and it's like, yeah, it's just such a traditional sport really. And there's never been, until now anyway, or until recently, there's never been that drastic change of anyone can do this. It's always just been like generally sort of middle class. You know, they do their club ride, they, you know, blah, 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 blah. There's never really been, that diversity in cycling, I guess, until very recently, and it's amazing to see for sure. And it's, yeah, I feel a lot more comfortable being able to like rock up to races and rides and just be myself.
Yeah,
because before, you know, when I was first getting into it, I was absolutely like, this is a different world to where I've come from.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I feel like, you know, some of those older clubs are maybe now starting to get a bit better at it, but there is still a huge amount of work to do. There really is. Even down to the side of like from British cycling, they got, I'm not going to go onto a rant about how much work they've got to do, but my God, they are behind in terms of the scale of what they should be doing for the sport. And they, you know, we'll get there eventually. I mean, the irony is we're two middle-aged white guys talking about cycling. We come from a very privileged stance of it, but it's a sport that is very accessible, and clubs and teams like Clash really started to help with that. And similarly with North London Thundercats, you know, and actually a lot of the, from when I lived in London, a lot of the London-based clubs are very, very good at sort of that, much better, in fact, much better at the inclusion and diversity than a lot of the ones that tend to be out in, you know, out in the countryside or elsewhere in the UK. City-based ones seem to be better, but yeah, any that are kind of in the middle of nowhere seem to be considerably worse. And I don't know whether that is because of, you know, maybe the diversity that's in cities as well. You know, there's fundamentally, there's more people per square meter in a city than there is, you know, where I live in the middle of the Peak District. So maybe that is part of it as well. But the more of it that happens, the better at the end of the day. And I do agree with you that it would be lovely to see something like Red Hook Crit come back again. Because even to go and spectate, I went to Barcelona once to watch, and I went to all of the London ones to go and watch them. I never did fixed gear racing because I didn't have a script. I mean, I have got a screw loose, but I didn't have that screw loose. That screw was firmly tight. But I very, you know, I it was very aspirational that I had a lot of friends that did it, and I used to go there to go and hang out with my friends more than anything. And the scene was just, it was good. It was really cool. It was really chilled. And I think, you know, the only other things that I think are kind of similar is maybe cyclocross to an extent. Depends on the race and the organizer, but there are some similarities in cross races. And yeah, then, as you say, gravel, which is it's funny because gravel has been a thing that has appeared over the last couple of years, but gravel has always been a thing. It's never not been a thing. People have been riding road bikes off road, or, you know, 90s downhill mountain bikes and using that as a gravel bike, etc. Like, it's never not been a thing, but it's become a thing because the cycling industry has created it's not like they've created a new discipline, but they've created a new option of offering of bike, which ultimately is a good thing, because that's providing another angle into the sport, which can be interesting to different people. And, you know, I think about it, like I did Silk Road Mountain Race in 2018. I did it on a cyclocross bike, like, because I was like, nah, it's just off-road. I've got a cross bike. It's got to be a cross bike race. Not realizing it really is a mountain bike race. But, you know, that was my first take on what gravel was. And I was like, nah, this isn't gravel. This is mountain bike. But all the prep and training for that was on a cyclocross bike, you know, and a lot of people are using cyclocross bikes for that kind of thing. But the scene for gravel is definitely much more accessible and welcoming. And I do also, there is a crossover, I think, with ultra distance as well, which is an incredibly welcoming scene. And I think part of that becomes because gravel and the ultra cycling is not like necessarily moderated by a governing body or anything. So there's a bit much more flexibility to do different things.
No, totally. And I think, you know, things are changing. I think a lot of everyone's so used to looking at the World Tour and everything that's going on there. That's kind of like the, you know, that's the kind of top of the sport, isn't it? And that's what everyone looks up to. But I think now, with over recent years, with, you know, the likes of EF Education doing their alternative calendar, their kit designs, their collaborations, it really is kind of starting to change that whole traditional World Tour scene as well. And obviously that just trickles down into clubs and teams and smaller teams and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's definitely getting there, but like you say, it's a long way to go. But for me, I enjoy the gravel scene, the ultra scene. I enjoy it all, really. But yeah, it's can't have it all, can you?
What do you think about the whole the restrictions in certain gravel races which have been implemented by the UCI?
By the UCI?
Yeah. So the UCI have brought in a rule. There's a rule which they brought in which stipulates about pro riders using TT bars, for starters.
Wait, is this in the UCI Gravel World Series or
UCI Gravel World Series? Yeah,
and
they've also like implemented certain. I think that's the main one. Is the TT bars? Is the UCI bringing that one in? I think my stance on it is like, if it's their World Series, fine, they can implement what they want.
Yeah, totally. I mean, look, it's the UCI. It's the UCI Gravel World Series. It is going to change. Last year was, you know, the first one they did. Worldwide sort of qualifying events leading up into the final race in Italy. And of course, there's going to be restrictions to what you can and can't do. I think, you know, riders, they weren't allowed any support. They weren't allowed any TT bars. I think there are a few other things as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's going to happen, unfortunately, with the UCI. I mean, there's some events in America that you can't race with TT bars. So the Belgian Waffle Ride, you can't race with TT bars. Unbound, no, you can't. I mean, it's a massive advantage. You know, there's no denying that. It's a huge advantage. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not too bothered, you know. doesn't really bother me, actually, to be totally honest with you. I mean, of course, if they start, like, if the UCI start putting in rules like, it's only open for the pro riders, or it's only open for like a certain caliber, then that's gonna totally steer it away from what gravel is, and that's not gonna be, you know, that's not gonna sit well with a lot of people, I don't think. I think it's nice that it's almost, you know, anyone racing gravel can go and race the UCI Gravel World Champs, which, you know, is a really amazing thing. Mm-hmm. If they start kind of, you know, turning it into a more sort of world tour thing where you have to be in a team, or you have to be like a, you know, it's, I don't think it's going to kill the racing a little bit, maybe.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And but I mean, the whole, you know, gravel racing in the US and you know, UK and Europe is so far away from the UCI Gravel World Series anyway. I don't think it's going to affect the wider picture, especially, you know, the US racing gravel in the US has been a thing for a very long time now, and you know, they're independent event organizers, and the events are so solid, and I don't think they're gonna worry about what the UCI are doing, or gonna kind of implement any rules that the UCI sort of suggest or whatever.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the races out in America have been there for a very long time before the UCI has got a sniff in on stuff, and as you say, America just seems to do things bigger, better, slicker. Like, it works really well. It's really well thought through. It's really well, like, presented and organized. And also, they've got so many incredible gravel roads out there. You know, I always knew America was big. And then when I went out there in September, October last year, and drove from like Los Angeles to like Vegas, because you got to see Vegas once in your life. Drove there, went and had a little walk around, and was like, cool, I'm done. Not my place. But how far that is, that's like a 6-hour drive. Like, that's a serious drive. In contrast, you do a 6-hour drive in the UK from like down south, you're basically in Scotland, you know? And to do that across America, like, you're only just about getting out of California to go into Vegas, and California is a huge, huge county. But anyway, America as a country has so much good gravel roads. So these races, which are all over the country, really, you know, are showcasing a great opportunity to, you know, demonstrate what you can do in those parts of the world where maybe there hasn't been such a drive for tourism, for interest, all that kind of stuff like that. And I remember talking to a guy who works with Garmin, and he was talking about one that's in Arkansas. I can't remember what race it is. And he was saying, like, oh, you know, this is a town which is like, it's not really a touristy town, but since this race has been here, it's really developed and grown as a tourist destination, because people not only are wanting to go and, you know, do the race, they're wanting to go there and just ride the roads anyway, or the gravel roads anyway, you know, out of the race and stuff, and explore it and see it and understand it as well. You know, we
100%. I mean, it's huge for the communities there, because usually these races out in the US are in sort of small towns, yeah, and they're usually quite hard to get to. So yeah, usually a small town, and yeah, look, you've got anywhere from 500 to 1,000 riders rocking up to these races, and you know, most people aren't going to be local, so you know, a huge business there for the hotels, Airbnbs and whatever. And then of course, you know, most people kind of rock up, you know, 5 days before the event, stay a little bit after, so it's, you know, everyone's kind of getting the local food, checking out this, yeah, huge opportunity for those small communities. I mean, I've just got back from the Belgium Off-Ride in Arizona, and that was sort of set in a really small niche town called Cave Creek. And it was literally just like a little sort of southwest, like super kind of cowboy style sort of weird little town. And you know, just got these bike riders everywhere. And it was, yeah, it was so cool to see. I mean, the local community were just stoked. And it was really nice to experience, you know, their way of living as well.
Mm-hmm. I think that's in a similar scale, I think that's one of the biggest successes of Badlands. So having done that race twice, I wish I'd done the first edition so I could say I've done it three times, but I didn't get in for the first one. But anyway, I haven't done it twice now. The bit that is very noticeable from the first and the second time I did it, the first time I did it, the route had changed quite significantly from the first edition to the second edition of the race. And the second and third edition were very similar. Now, what was very noticeable from the first edition to the second edition was that you go out into these little villages and towns that are in the middle of absolutely nowhere. You know, tourists don't really go there. They're very small. You know, there might be like one little shop or a little cafe or a little bar or something. But what we were noticing at Badlands, and also the same in, to be fair, Morocco, Atlas Mountains, is that when people start to know of an event that's happening, they go all out for it, because some people go, there's you know, whatever it is, 500, 1,000 riders, whatever it is, coming through here, plus, you know, media crews, organizers, et cetera, coming through here who are doing this race. They need food, they need drink, they need somewhere to sleep. We can actually do quite well out of this financially. But the bit that I found really lovely was that during, from the two editions I saw, the first time I did it, you sort of like, there's a couple of bars that were like, oh my God, like bloody hell, why are there so many cyclists here? And then the next year they're like, hey, we've got, come here, you can fill up your water bottles, you can, you know, buy some drinks, buy some food. And look, we've got, what, one bar had like these huge boxes of sweets and nuts and stuff, and it was just like, help yourself, like, for free. Was there like, you know, what you're doing is crazy, so just help yourself. And seeing things like that have happened, and like David, the organizer, is like, I'm fine with that because it's available to everyone, it's not a problem. But having stuff like that has really, you know, helped those locations, which are kind of locations in the middle of nowhere, to gain more interest from tourists. And David was saying to me that what they've noticed as well is that people are coming to just ride the route, because the route's out there. The route's there and it's available. Mm. People are just coming to ride it, which keeps the tourism aspect of it growing and continuing. Same in Atlas Mountains from Morocco as well. And that's only a positive thing. That really is a positive thing for that side of the sport. And I think it's great that we're seeing more of these events popping up that are maybe... I think Badlands is a very accessible ultra race. I think it's on the scale of ultra races, is you do need to prepare for it. You do need to train for it. But you don't need anything overly... You need a gravel bike, ultimately, or a mountain bike will be fine. But you don't need to go overly crazy with like having to buy equipment and etc. Like you can do it, you could do it quite on the cheap. It's in Europe, it's pretty accessible. You could fly into Granada, so like that's good, that's where the race starts, like it's pretty easy there. It's a great race because of that ability of it being accessible. It's not crazy distances. You're in Europe, you know, you kind of know what kind of food and drink you're going to get. Like, it's good. It's really good. And I think that's a fantastic event for anyone to do. Atlas Mountains, on the different side of it, is definitely a different kettle of fish, especially this year. But the same thing, the people are incredibly friendly and welcoming, and more out of Marrakesh, more in the middle of nowhere, people are incredibly hospitable and welcoming and wanting to look after and support you. And at that race, like, the police support throughout the whole race, I've never seen anything like it. Like, you're riding along 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, whatever it is, there's a policeman sitting there, just sitting by the side of the road, checking you're all right, you know. That's quite humbling, actually, to see that. But yeah, I think we're at a time where the gravel scene, the ultra scene, that there is a merge, there definitely is, and it's growing in a very positive way. It's an incredibly accessible introduction to the side of cycling and the sport. We're seeing many like great events, you know, races out in America, Badlands. I always think of like Dirty Reaver, which is like a fantastic event that's been going now for, I don't know how many years, very long time. But that you know, that was like one of the first gravel events in the UK. And now in the UK, we're seeing so many other events coming out of that, whether it's smaller events. We've got Grinduro now in Wales. You've got the people who organise Dirty Reaver organise like four or five events. There's Duke's Weekender up in Scotland. Like there's a lot of different things coming out of it, which is slowly enhancing that scene. And I do feel providing a different entry into the sport for many people. If the gravel scene was as strong as it is now, when I got into cycling, I wouldn't have bought a road bike. I just wouldn't have bothered.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, true. To be honest, I hardly ever ride my road bike now. To be fair, I mean, I actually really enjoy road racing. To be honest, I really like Criterions, and I really like that fast paced, energetic way of racing for an hour. That's kind of why I started racing, really. So I do like it, but I 9 times out of 10, if I'm going out on a ride outside, then I'll be on the gravel bike or mountain bike for sure.
Yeah.
I just hate traffic. Really, yeah. Is the crux of it. I don't like riding on roads.
I mean, where I am, I'm lucky that it actually doesn't tend to be that many cars. But I still get there's a random traffic light in the middle of the Peak District, and it's like, oh, fuck's sake, way no traffic light. And it hides up like in London. I lived in London for a long time, but I'd probably spend like a half an hour to an hour of my time riding stuck at traffic lights or in traffic. And here it's like, once you get out of the town I'm in, small town I'm in, and you go out into the peaks, there's literally one traffic light. And it's because the road has like collapsed and they've done it as a one-way road effectively. So you've got like, you have a really big, I'm sure I've seen this list as well. You have a really big list, don't you, for your plans this year, in terms of races you're doing and events you're doing. And it's pretty crazy. I have seen it. It's on your Instagram. So next up for you is Battle of the Beach.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So what are we today? The 14th of March. So yeah, Battle of the Beach is the end of this month, which I'm excited about, actually. Matt Page, the owner, who also runs Grit Fest. He's been a real big sort of driver for the gravel scene here in the UK. So he's been running Battle on the Beach now for a number of years. Actually, I don't know how many years, but it's been going on for a while. It's like a staple event in the UK, really. Mm-hmm. It attracts a lot of European riders because they love the beach racing. That one's kind of first up. I had a pretty good result last year, just missing out on a top five position, so I'm really looking to kind of head out to that one and kind of test where I'm at, really. It's a really unique event, kind of starting out on a beach. There's maybe sort of 5k, maybe less actually, on the beach, and then onto like really nice single track and wooded sections and so on. So it's a really super fun course, and definitely recommend it for anyone that's looking to kind of getting into gravel / cyclocross / mountain bike in the UK.
The gravel bikes you see out in some of the races in the Netherlands are just bonkers. I think it's one of the Beat Cycling guys has got some crazy looking. A lot of the bikes out there, it seems they take a hardtail and just make it really, really fast and put drop bars on it.
Well, they have specific beach bikes for these races. You know, it's huge in the Netherlands and Belgium. I mean, the guys that come out to Battle on the Beach just absolutely just KO the course. They're just so good at riding in sand, and like I say, they have these bikes built specifically to race on sand. That's a whole thing I didn't actually know about until I started doing this race a few years back. It's a whole different scene out there.
Are you going to do anything specific to your bike for it? Is it just going to be a case of changing tyres, maybe?
Tyres, for sure. Slick tyres are definitely the way forward, just because I made the mistake one of the years running like just a cyclocross tyre and had a real tough time navigating through the sand. Mm. Having something wide and slick is definitely the way to go for that race. Mm. But yeah, so So I've kind of like titled my off-road project this year Destination Next in collaboration with Sturka, and it's kind of like my journey, my next journey really, I guess. Like I say, I've kind of come from the fixed gear scene and blah 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 blah. I've set up my own team, and now it's just kind of I wanted to really hone in on this year, see what I can do, see what sort of, you know, results I can get. But ultimately I just want to explore the world as much as I can on my bike and really kind of chase that adventure. You know, as much as I'm going into these races looking to get a good result and, you know, take something from it, I also want to explore my limits, I guess, and kind of experience new things, meet new people, you know, and being able to travel around with your bike is just such an incredible thing and such a privilege. And yeah, and of, you know, and being able to kind of showcase that and tell that story to people as well is super important to me.
Yeah, ultimately you are an athlete, but you are also a storyteller. You know, you're pulling people along with your journey, and Sam also is an incredibly, I'm not going to blow too much, I don't know what the expression is, too much wind up your bonnet or something? I don't know what it is. Sounds good. Too much wind on your fire? I don't know. Making up expressions. But Sam is also an incredibly good photographer and has like...
Excellent.
Doesn't only just document, you know, it's very hard to document a lot of this stuff yourself, but you somehow seem to manage to do a pretty good job of it, whether that's through yourself or through photographers on the events. Like, it's always well told and well curated, which is great to see. And like, you're literally... You're in America, Spain, UK, Spain, UK, UK, you know, literally Italy, all over the world. And being able to, you know, we're very, very lucky to be able to do this kind of stuff. And it is a, I always try and explain it that it is hard work, but it is also a real privilege to be able to do it and to pull people along on those journeys and adventures who maybe can't do it themselves or can't maybe whether that's financially can't do it or don't necessarily have the confidence to do it or the you know, it's great to be able to pull people along on those kind of journeys and showcase that experience for them. And
100%, it's really important for me because I never looked at cycling in this way. You know, I I didn't really know much about cycling at all until you know, not even that long ago really, what, like less than 10 years ago. I didn't have a clue about the Tour de France or anything. I was just so far away from what I was doing at that time. And to get it to this point where it's traveling around the world, racing against the very best, it's just so so weird. Like, I never thought I'd be here doing this. So it's you know, it's very important for me to showcase that and you know, showcase that and just, you know, it's not, you know, I've not come from a cycling background at all. You know, I've not kind of just landed on my feet here. It's, you know, it's been super hard work to get it to where it is, and being able to kind of share that story and race these events is really important for me, for sure.
I think people don't often understand or appreciate the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes. And that's because I think quite often people, it's boring, in all honesty. I don't think people want to talk about it or show it, but there's a lot of work having to, you know, deal with partners, sponsors, logistics, travel, working out how to fund these kind of things. There's a hell of a lot of work that goes on behind that. Testing equipment, working out what's right for you for the race, you know, really dialing in exactly what you want. Like, I mean, I've done bad. The one that always comes to my mind is I've done Badlands twice and I haven't nailed the equipment list that I want for it. There's always been something I'm like, nah, it's not quite right. That's not quite right. The one thing I am pretty set on is the gear ratios that I will use and the bike I will use, but nothing else, like in terms of what I need to pack, because as an example, both years I've done it, one year it's been plus 45 degrees and 20 degrees at night. The other year it's been plus 30 degrees, but like maybe down to about 5 degrees at night. So like, you can never quite get it right, but there's a huge amount of additional, like, just admin shit that goes on behind the scenes that takes its toll. And also, I think the whole traveling side of it as well, that also does take its toll on you. It does feel very glamorous, but it's hard. It is very hard to manage and deal with it.
It's a weird lifestyle. Like especially with the sort of last year of Clash and stuff, it all got a little bit overwhelming, and I actually just thought, like, why am I even doing this? And you know, like, it's because bike racing is so, you know, you spend so much time by yourself, so many hours away, so many hours training, you're so distant from almost reality in a sense. Like, you know, I'm quite lucky to have a girlfriend that kind of appreciates what I do and allows me to have that time to do all of this. And you know, it is selfish in a way, really. You know, I've put bike racing and training and stuff before a lot of things. And you know, there probably will be one day where I look back at it and think, oh, you know, was it worth it? Oh, you know, it's just how my mindset works at the moment. I know exactly what I want from bike racing. I want to try and be the best athlete I can, and you know, I really want to go on this continue on this journey, and nothing's really going to get in the way of that for me, I think. It's a very selfish sport, really, especially at the very top level of racing and the world tour and stuff. You know, there's people make huge sacrifices to do what they're doing, so it's a real. And there's that, and then there's obviously, like, what we've just talked about, the logistics, and it's a huge thing behind just racing the bike.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people just don't see.
People forget, you know, in the, you know, the bit that I always think is people forget the logistics side of it, is if you were, say, a pro top tier world tour rider, that's all kind of done for you. When you're trying to do it on your own, you have to incorporate that into everything else. And you know, to be, as you say, it is, so cycling is weirdly a selfish sport, and it's also selfish in the sense at the top end, because yes, it might be a team effort, but one rider wins, you know, that's how it is. Unless there's a team time trial, which is a different kettle of fish, right? That's a team sport, maybe. But there definitely are like aspects. I think what you're doing, and to an extent what I do as well, is probably harder in terms of trying to juggle it all and trying to juggle a normal life. You know, you still got to go to the in-laws for dinner one evening, whatever it is. There's still like blah blah blah's wedding that you've got to go to, etc. etc. There's still things that they're like unsacrificable things that you have to do, because there's the element of, you know, focusing on your performance, your training, but also you have to do normal life, human stuff as well, because ultimately, like, especially here in a relationship, like, geez, that's where it gets, that's the balancing act. And you, as you say, it's very, I think we're both quite lucky that we both have partners who are very understanding of what we do. And that does help.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you know, like, I'm, just for anyone that doesn't know, I mean, I'm not a full-time athlete. I do work full-time as well. So balancing that as well with all the training and the racing is it's a huge commitment, but you know, but I'm I'm super driven with it, and I, you know, I make time for it. I don't, you know, I like to get my training done either early or late at night, and I just try and make it happen. Because, you know, if I'm not training, I'm not putting in the hours, and I'm gonna be at the back of the race. So it's, you know, you have to make these sacrifices, and yeah, working full time, it's hard to get the hours in for sure compared to some of the guys that are full time. So it's just about really kind of driving yourself and just putting in as much work as you can, really, you know.
So would you say there's any particular race or event which is a real big goal for you this year?
So yeah, so I started out my season, like I said, with that race in Arizona, the Belgium Off Ride. That was, you know, it's still very early on in the season. I kind of wanted that to be like, deep down, I knew it was going to be like a bit of a test. You know, I was just going to kind of see where I was at, you know, test the bike, test the equipment, you know, see where I'm at mentally, physically. There was a lot to take away from it for sure. But I think as well. I wanted to get a good result there because, you know, it was such a big trip. There's so much. I mean, I was literally thinking about the weirdest little things, and just it just literally took over my life actually for the past 2 months or so. Just it was so consuming. And I think all of that came when it came down to race day. I was just like, oh, it's just another race, I'm here and this is it. So it was such a consuming race for me, I think. But that for sure I think was one of my targets. I didn't do as well as I wanted to, just because the fitness wasn't quite there. And I, you know, like I say, deep down, I kind of knew that. But I think, you know, the calendar I've crafted up, I've got Seattle in America in April next month, which is is around an 80-mile cross country mountain bike race. Again, with all of these professional US races, it's part of the Lifetime Grand Prix series. So it's by no means going to be an easy race. So for sure, I want a good result there, but I know I'm not going to, you know, this is actually my first cross-country race, so I don't know what to expect. I'm going to go there with, you know, an open mind and try and race as best as I can.
Yeah.
The Tracker, which is another great race in Girona, I'd love to get a good result there. That's going to be one of my targets for sure. Mm-hmm. Had a really good race last year, and that was the biggest ride I'd done to date. So to get into the top 20 there was I was super happy about that. So now I have the experience and I've put in the bigger miles and I know how to kind of race that distance at a high effort. I'm hoping to try and get a good result there, but I know that there's a lot of good riders too. And it's just these races, you can't really plan them. You just kind of have to see how you are on the day. Hope you don't get any troubles with the bike. Hope your legs hold up. Hope your nutrition's dialed in. There's so many sort of moving parts to it all, really. Then there's the UCI gravel series here in the UK, which for sure I'd love to get a good result there as well. And then Badlands, which Jesse Yates, who I'm doing it as a pair with, Sean Yates's younger son, so we're going into that one to win it 100%. There's no other option. We both want to win that race. You know, we've been planning it for a while. We kind of know what we want to do there. I think it could be possible, especially, you know, I've never done a race with a pair as well. So I think it's going to help us get through to the end, for sure. So that's like the big one, I think, for us. And then the King's Cup gravel, which is for sure one I'd love to win. But you know, it's
who turns up on the day as well. It's whoever turns up on the start as well. That's the bit you can't control. You can only control the controllables.
Exactly. You know, I feel like I'm at a point now where I am competitive. I know I can get a good result. It's just really about putting this work to good use, and hopefully try and have a good race. What's lined up for me this year?
I think it's a very exciting schedule. And are you still doing Pan Celtic as well?
It's, yeah, provisionally, yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to see whether it would, because after Pan Celtic, there's the Badlands, there's the UCI Gravel World Series, there's the King's Cups. There's a lot of important races to me after that.
Yeah, so it's a toss-up whether that extra mileage is going to be detriment or not, right?
Yeah, I'd absolutely love to do the Pan Celtic, but I just feel like it might, might hammer the rest of my season. So I'm just going to play it by ear, really. I'll probably decide a couple of weeks before, maybe, and just kind of go into it and, you know, see what happens.
It's the best way of doing it. Like, I think, you know, I quite often put, like, I have a schedule of, like, generally 4 ultra style things a year, and that really is much more than that, and so other things obviously do pop up here and there, but 4 is kind of my limit, really. And I know if I go more, if I could put all my eggs in one thing for a year and focus on it and probably do quite well, but for my sanity, having 4 means that if one doesn't go to plan, I've got another one to fall back onto, and that definitely is a really helpful thing. Having to the variety as well, like different events at different places. It just helps me mentally kind of cope with it a bit better. But sometimes I have had it in the past where my diary has ended up with like, not intentionally, but there's been like 6 or 7 big events. And I'm just like, how is this? This isn't actually achievable over the course of a year when you bear in mind the prep, the training, and then the fallout that comes off the back of it, and then having to then build back up again, and then the fallout that comes off the back of it, that it ends up that you don't actually have any time to train. You're just continually riding this like build up, get ready, do an event, your fitness increases, but also your fatigue goes sky high, and then you plummet at the end of it. And that's generally how I go, is I end up doing these sort of waves, and that's just, I can't, after an event, I need to have time off because I put a lot mentally and physically into them. And the charity projects are 100% the worst ones for that. Yeah. They take like Badlands, that's like, you know, a week maybe, but something like the Everests, that was like a month, you know.
Yeah.
There's very much a different kettle of fish on how they go. But, you know, being able to look at your provisional list and plan and be able to go, I don't think that's right for this time, is very mature. And I think maybe more people could learn a lot from that, to be honest with you, instead of trying to do everything, being able to go, you know, I'll provisionally put it there and we'll see what happens. And, you know, a couple of weeks before, if it's not right, it's not right. I think that shows a level of maturity that a lot of people maybe haven't got to yet. I it's something I struggled with for a very long time.
Yeah, for sure. I try not to think about a lot of it too much, to be honest. I mean, as long as I'm doing the training I'm set to do and working hard towards the goal, then I think I'm, you know, you're going to be ready. You're going to have the fitness and as soon as it comes down to the race, if you decide to do it, then, you know, you're going to be ready, you know. There's nothing worse than rocking up to a race and knowing you're not ready to race. It just feels like a waste of time.
Yeah. I feel that a lot. I really do. But yeah, I think really, Sam, like, as you stressed, you do also have a full-time job. You do also work for Sterker, which I think is important to mention. You've got your Sterker cap on. Is there anything that you can, I mean, I know kind of some of the stuff that's coming, but is there anything you can tease of us as what's coming next with Sterker?
Yeah. So I've been working with Sterker now as an athlete for about a year or so, but more professionally in-house and as a full-time employee for about 4 months. It's probably been the best career move I think I've ever done. Super happy. You know, Sterker's only not even 2 years old yet. We're still a young and growing company. We're super passionate about what we do. You know, we're making some of the best products out there. We're riding all of these events ourselves. We're so involved with the community, and we just want to help athletes perform at their best and almost just give them what they deserve in terms of nutrition and support and community and everything and the lifestyle. Sterker is much more than just a nutrition brand, I think. So what we've got lined up this year is Sea Otter, the mountain bike race. We'll be out there actually trading at the show. Sea Otter is a big US trade show. The idea is to race up there at the same time. You know, we'll be doing some running out there and really just kind of, you know, we've got some stacked out events lined up, and we're not going out there just to kind of, you know, mill around, show our products. We're there to be involved with the community, race, ride. You know, we want to be involved as much as we can. And of course, we want to try and win and get some good results too. We've got some really exciting products coming out. One at the end of this month, which we are super stoked about. I guess really just lots of exciting events, lots of exciting products. There's lots on our plate. We've just secured some distribution in Europe, which is going to be massive for us. So Sterker will be growing into Europe over the coming years, which is, we're super hyped about. We've just started working with a company in the US, so we're sort of branching out into the US, which is again mega exciting. It's a huge market for us, and you know, with a lot of these big races out there, we're gonna be there as well, and have some good presence hopefully over the coming months at some of these races.
It's very exciting. What's going on? It's very exciting. What's going on? I feel like I've seen it from being a thought process in the back of Christian's mind to where Sterka is now. Has been fantastic. It's been really cool to see it grow and develop as a brand, and ultimately produce more and more products which are helping people, and not just very serious people all the way in the spectrum of sports, endurance sports, be able to enhance and fuel themselves, and also, you know, help them grow as an athlete or whatever they perceive themselves as being. And also the bars are like crack. So gonna say that as well.
100%. I mean, there's so many nutrition brands out there that just focus on the top 10% of professional cycling or professional sport, mm-hmm. Perhaps. And like, you know, we saw that and thought, why is that? Why does nutrition have to be so, obviously it needs to be performance based, but why does it have to be so, I don't know. We just wanted to kind of help that everyday athlete. You know, we want to help people become the best athlete they can be, whether that's, you know, couch to 5K or down to the professional sector. We're not sort of strapped to a single category. You know, we're very open, and like I say, we're very community driven. I'm really excited about the future for Sterka, to be honest. Yeah, it's rad.
It's rad. Well, on that note, I'm going to leave it there. Sam, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, man.
In the link of all this stuff, a little description as to where people can follow you on your photography and your cycling person Instagram account as well, because both are really lovely and both are well worth a follow. Hope everyone liked this podcast. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Chris. Cheers. You know who made